Since it's a colloquium, I decided to speak about a few subjects rather than focusing on only one. However, as you will see, they have the common denominator, and the common denominator is the dynamics of the extra dimensions. So there are many extensions of the standard model who forecast the existence of extra dimension. And what is interesting is that, of course, extra dimensions are associated to dynamical fields, which in a way requires some work to be done because we have to stabilize them. But this is a good thing because the dynamical things are objects which we can detect. And I will argue that a careful study of this you have to do in the machinery of GR, because as I will argue, whenever you have fields in the extra space, perturbation of the fields are mixed with perturbation of the geometry. And typically you cannot ignore ones when you study the other ones. And then I will, after just some few comments, I will go into some applications, which you see are quite diverse, but still. One is the coupling of perturbation to standard model fields. So this is what we hope to prove in accelerators. Then I will discuss the effect of the expansion, right? We have a compact dimension times non-compact dimensions. And the first calculation is on Minkowski space. But here I will want to discuss especially application during inflation. So application for this would be what could be models, for example, of string theory, what in the early universe, and what are the problems. As this year, we consider only simplified situations. And these are work that I've done last year in Toronto. However, I hope I will have time also to discuss some work in progress that I'm doing right now. One is related to possibility of ghost or packet configuration in the extra dimension. I think this is quite motivated by interesting paper by Maxime. And then, even more speculative, how you can change the shape of gravity in extra dimensions. Yes. The OK one? Good. I wish I could play. So as I said, right, there are extensions of the standard model, which I'm considering here compact extra dimensions. And of course, the question that you say is, why don't we see them? Because it's clear that the nature we see is four-dimensional. And the traditional answer, we don't see them because they are very small. They are compactified on very small radii, and then there's no way we can excite them. However, recently, you know, there's been a big change of prospects. And actually, the idea is that when we discover that gauge fields can be localized on brains in the open strings, the idea is that actually we live on sub-manifolds, so we indeed live in four dimensions. And the only thing in the simplest cases which can propagate in the extra dimension, for example, could be gravity. And actually, this was the first proposal of large extra dimension, where the idea of having weak gravity, right, is due to the fact that the gravity is the only object which propagates in a larger space. So if you just apply Gauss law, you would see that the gravity is weaker than the other forces. And this is more or less where the experimental limit is right now on the size of the extra dimension, which is an incredibly large limit, but that's what we have. And let me just, I'm sure you all know this, but let's just state notation. Then there is also the idea of warped extra dimension, where the idea is that now you put some cosmological constant in the extra space, and you put some rays again, and this is where we are supposed to live. But then now, due to the presence of this cosmological constant, you can have a warped extra dimension. Well, you see, this is the extra space, that's for dimension one. And then here there is what is called the warp factor. What is important is that the warp factor is like a conformal factor. So what it does is it changes, it rescales the physical scales on the brain. And it was proposed as an idea, the first paper, to solve the hierarchy problem, for example, because if you start with a theory where the only scale is the Planck scale, you can have an exponential rescaling, so it's quite quick to get TV out of this theory. Right, that was the first proposal. But what is important in this model is clearly you have to stabilize the extra space. For example, in the Randall-Sandrew model, we all know the modulus, the distance between the brain, is a parameter which is not fixed by gravity. And this opens both theoretical and phenomenological questions. Theoretical because, right, okay, we know that the exponential of 35 is 10 to the 16. But then you have to tune this with very strong accuracy, because the exponential of 35.1 is already something which will deal with that. So certainly it's not something which is impossible, but it is a thing that you have to discuss once you know the mechanism which is responsible for fixing this, the size. And of course, these are things which you know must be there, because in this model, for example, the perturbation of the exospace, they are coupled to us, to brain field, at the electronic scale. And certainly, we cannot have massless fields which are coupled to the electronic scale. We could have seen them. And another thing which Maxime worked out, among other people, is also the expansion of the universe. We know that the expansion of the universe is a 4D, starting from nucleosynthesis on. There's no way that this can be changed. However, gravity is a very democratic thing. And if you just put gravity, gravity tries to make everything expand. So you really need to freeze the extra space in order to have a standard gravity. Now, what is the stabilization mechanism? There are two or three mechanisms that I'm aware of. But the main idea is that you have to put a spring in the extra space. You have to put something which doesn't want to be contracted too much and also doesn't want to be expanded too much. That's the idea. And typically, what prevents from contraction is the gravity effect. You put a field. This field has a non-trivial profile. This is either due to boundary condition, or maybe it could be a topological condition. And then this non-trivial profile prevents the field from being unrocked. And then, of course, you cannot squeeze the space too much, otherwise you will get a gradient energy. Also, for example, you put some potential energy, and then the field will also be, the space will also prevent it to be expanding too much, because otherwise you would pay too high potential energy. So the idea is that if you are careful enough, you can get a space which indeed is stabilized.
Yes? This was the idea of largest planet is supposed to be a solution to the fine-tuning problem, the non-gravity problem.
Yeah.
But if you have the very closely fine-tuning your spring,
yeah,
is it actually yet not a solution to the fine-tuning?
Well, the only thing I want to claim is that you certainly have to discuss within any given stabilization mechanism. Because you cannot just say the brain is at 35 and that's a solution. I think you have really to explain me why it's 35 and why this 35 has to get corrected by the correction too much. So I'm not really claiming that it's not a solution, I'm just claiming that you need these additional ingredients. And I just need to tell you what everyone does, at least in this model. The simplest thing to do, you just put a scalar field. This is the proposal by Goldberger and Weiss. This scalar field has some potential both in the bulk and on the brains. And typically what you do, you have to take a very strong potential in the brain, such that the scalar field is pinned, right? It's really pinned to the back, if this parameter is very high. So that indeed, in this way, through boundary condition, you force an intrigued profile. Now, once you have an intrigued profile, as I told you before, you have something which doesn't want to be squeezed. And then if you add also a potential in the bulk, you can make the thing stable. Now, what you can do, you can integrate over this dimension. And if you do the calculation and you are quick as me, first what you would get this red line. This is precisely, if you take the paper by Goldberger and Weiss and do the calculation, you get this red line. You really don't see anything. But then you realize something which it was clearly added after then, very quickly, is that the presence of this scalar field also destabilizes the fine-tuning of understanding. In a sense, here the minimum doesn't have zero energy. So what you do, you change the tuning of the cosmological concept. And that is where is the minimum of the Goldberger and Weiss mechanism. It is, you see, you can see it's order 10 to the minus 60. We have the implantian unit, of course. And then one could argue, this is something which I want to show you because it's never presented in this way. There's some problems if you're interested in cosmology, of course, because this was a problem which was noticed very long ago for models of superstrings. And this is known as Bluestein-Steiner problem. Essentially, if your field is here, well, first you don't know if you can really trust this potential, because this potential is done in the approximation that the field moves very slowly. But what will happen if you start with the field here, you will simply overshoot. So if you are like me, interested also in cosmology, the message is that you really have to start here. Because, and this is also some fine-tuning of the initial condition. If you are interested in having this model to be sensible for cosmology. Actually, if you want to study the dynamics, it's very hard to do it analytically. Also, we worked a numerical code which allows you to study these dynamics. And the message is indeed that this minimum is very small, something that everyone can see.
Something like a topological twisted field that would give it a profile on its own.
possibly, I don't know. There are other mechanisms. Of course, what happens, this is a consequence that the mass of the extra dimension is not at the planetary scale. It's very weak. You can probably have another model where the mass is higher. I'm aware of other models which do stabilization with gauge fields, these gauge fields which have like Dirac quantization, so they have an untriggered profile. I'm aware of the use of Casimir energy. That's all I'm aware. I'm not aware of many other mechanisms, but it should be. And once you want to study really the behavior of this state that I was arguing, you really have to, in a sense, to quantize the system of the perturbation. And this is where the expertise of GR comes in. Because if you add a field in the byte, the perturbation of this field will be mixed with the perturbation of the geometry. And there's really no way you can disentangle them. You cannot really do the approximation. You will not get a sensible result. What you have to do, essentially, you have to study the system of perturbations. And that's something where we are very familiar with in cosmology, because in cosmology, we are all familiar with the perturbation of scalar field during inflation. And this is a work which generalizes that calculation. It is more complicated because there is one extra dimension. So instead of having only one perturbation, you have a Kalita-Klein type of perturbations. Also, the brains complicate the situation, because when you have total derivative, you cannot just forget them. So we have really to make a careful calculation. However, the system, you can exploit the analogy. So let me just mention what the analogy is. In this refers to standard cosmology. And this instead refers now to work geometry. Here you have a background, which depends only on time. It's the cosmological evolution. In this case, the background is, for example, the Randall Sundrum background, something which depends on y. Here you have the scalar. The reason why you have this scalar is to have inflation. Here you have the scalar because you want stabilization. Here there is the scale factor. The analogous is the work factor, as I was telling you. And the idea is that here you are interested to study the perturbation of the scalar with the geometry because you study the effect on the CME. And ideally, here you want to study, for example, the effect for accelerators. In both cases, you have a linearized system of Einstein equations. And here, there is also the simplicity that this is an initial value problem. You have to specify the condition at some initial time during inflation. Of course, this is very subtle, because what do you really mean with initial time before inflation? It's something that opens problems of observation, right? Can I really, for example, in the CMB, do I have a place where I can see what the real initial conditions were? For example, if inflation lasted 16 volts, it would claim that on larger scales, we are sensitive to the initial values. Here is a boundary value problem. We have the two boundaries, and we have to impose constraints from there. What I want to stress, however, is that in both cases, you really need to compute the action for the perturbation. The Einstein equation alone are not enough. The reason is that the linearized Einstein equations are linear in all the perturbations, so you cannot determine the normalization from there. And why do you need to get the normalization? You then need to get normalization, I will argue, because you needed to know the exact coupling to the brains. Here, you needed to know the normalization to get the initial conditions. So it's something which is a bit involved, but I want to stress the message is that typically, if you just have the, of course, the two are equivalent, but if you just know these, there is still not enough to get the normalization. Yes?
Related to this is,
I will very briefly mention it, and maybe if you want I can talk later, but this is certainly also comes from the action. You write the action, you vary, is the reduction conditions, of course, but you can get them from the action principle. So you add the Hawking-Wilson term, and then you just vary that part.
So the four-dimensional boundary condition
uses
the
Hawking-Wilson system? Yes, that's what I'm doing. And you can plug everything, you have to plug everything into the action, and the variation principle at the boundary, you know, is when you do the equation, typically you discharge the boundary. Now instead you have to impose that also the variation of the boundary vanishes, and this gives a just solution. For me, it's the quicker way to consider that. Just one more slide on cosmology, just to see what really the point is. The point is that it's in cosmology, the time, you single it out, and then you have a rotation in the space, assuming isotropy and homogeneity of the background. The best thing to do is to divide your perturbation in sectors. Here maybe you can see that the green one is the scalar sector. These are scalar with respect to SO3 rotations. Then you have vectors, and then you have tensors. The point why I'm doing this exercise is because perturbations which belong to different representations, of course, they are not coupled at the linear level. You cannot just have a coupling between a scalar and a vector because this is not SO3 invariant. So what you have, you can really single out the perturbations, and in this way you can already simplify the calculation. In the standard case, you can see they have to adapt to 10 perturbations. This is the perturbation of a symmetric matrix. And there are 4 scalars, 2 times 2 in the vector, 2 in the tensor. And then you can use gauge invariant to further reduce the number of perturbations. And then you classify the remaining perturbation in gauge invariant zones, in this case. This is a very well-defined procedure for me, and our task initially was to extend this to 5 dimensions.
Sure.
You're
not doing cosmology in 5 dimensions.
No, no.
Just a static, or
yes,
static background, and you're only interested
yes.
in the spatial.
Exactly. I will discuss a bit something in cosmology, but then the calculations become harder. So at the moment, I want to really present you a clean total calculation in the assumption that the brains are purely in cost. But I'm using the many instruments from the cosmology because there is a strong analogy between them. Now, what happens, there are, as I say, those in this case, scalar, vector, and tensors. But I want to discuss here only the scalar sector because it's really the more complicated one. The tensor and the vector sector are quite easy, and I will not discuss them here. The calculations shows that there are several modes. However, there are also constraint equations. Of course, you know, like Einstein equation is a covariant way to describe the thing, which means it has more degrees of freedom, but you have also some constraint equations. So what you do here is a semi-classical calculation. What I do, I use the constraint equation to eliminate what in my language are redundant degrees of freedom. And I end up, you can show with only one mode, which is dynamic. The equation for this mode are of this form. There is a box, so there are derivatives, and then there is some given operator, which depends on the background. Right? This was the background work factor, and this is the background scalar field. What you can do, since the geometry is very nice, this is the consequence here, you can separate the variables, of course, and you will have Kaluza-Klein modes. And here the Kaluza-Klein modes are not the simple one in a circle, but because you have this non-trivial function. But the idea is very similar. This mode is your quantum operator, and this mode instead is the wave function of this operator in the bulk. My goal is to get an action for this mode and to compute all the coefficients in the action. And again, let me stress all these equations that I'm writing. Here I'm not writing the boundary condition, but I can discuss later on if you want. These are all linear, so I cannot compute the normalization just looking at these equations. Why do we need the normalization? Well, because you see, the here is in the interaction Lagrangian between the perturbation and the brain. Typically, the perturbation coupled at a linear order with the stress, with the traits of the stress energy tensor. But this is calculated at the location of the brain. So in order to calculate the coupling, I need to know this number. And in order to know this number, I need to know the normalization. So the exercise that I'm going to do now, very quickly, is really to compute this normalization. Just as a warm-up, just to show you how it goes, you can first take the example where there is no scalar. So here there is no stabilization. This is pure Van der Sandrew, and this is the scalar node in Van der Sandrew. Well, what you find in this case is that the Kaluza-Klein tower is absent. There is only one mode, which is massless, and here is the action. Here is very simple. What you see is that indeed I'm factorizing the action. There will be a part which depends on the y coordinate, and there will be a part which depends on the q coordinate. And I will impose. So you see here there is a normalization which is not determined at the moment. But what I will do, I will impose that this coefficient sum up to -1/2. Here I'm using the metric -++. So this is quite simple in word. Of course, it will be more in word. But the idea is that once I fix this coefficient, I know the normalization. This is the only way that I'm aware to fix the normalization. And in this case, you have only one massless field, so the calculation is quite easy. Now let's add the bulk field. And what it turned out, there is this very nice paper, actually. This paper calculates the wave function of the perturbations in the limit in which you can have a bulk field, but the bulk field is very small. So here we consider the limit in which the field, the Goldberger and Weiss field have a very small depth, so that you can neglect this impact on the geometry. If you do the calculation, you will see that in this approximation, you don't disturb very much the profile of the fluctuations, and in this case, the previous lines that I was giving you still applies for the radio. Now, how small does it have to be? You can do the calculation. Typically, in Planckian units, it means a depth which is order 1 divided by 100 or 1 divided by 50 at most. This is certainly something which is acceptable. This is what everyone does. So, whenever you learn that the radio is coupled at the electronic scale with the brain, they refer to this paper and they refer to this regime. So the radio is coupled at the electroweak scale whenever you satisfy this equation. My goal is to make the exact calculation. So I want to extend the calculation beyond this regime. So I want to consider a value for the field which is can be of order 1, where the profile of the perturbation is really modified. And this is still a solution which could be acceptable with a hierarchy problem solution. It's just technically more complicated. There will be a change, but what you will see actually they will decrease because when you modify the geometry, if I require that the hierarchy problem is still solved, I will have also to push the brain far away.
My question is that you're no longer satisfying the hierarchical problem.
I am.
You're away from, if you're in the regime then by roughly of the order of 1 or by greater than 1, then you're not hopefully with a greater hierarchy.
I would just require, I know how to compute Planck mass, the geometry is modified, but Planck mass will not change too much. Then I will choose the position of the second brain such that the work factor is always decreased there. You will still have an almost exponential decrease of the work factor. So the scales on our brain would still be TV. But of course, you're right, you're modifying the geometry, so this is not trivial. You have to think a bit how you're doing. And there is, of course, down where you put the boundaries, also change dramatically the profile of the calculator. So this is an exercise that you need to do and requires some thinking. Yes?
That's a somewhat more general question. But when you wrote the general, not limiting to this particular model, when you wrote the general equation, you've got a Dahl-Meritzen.
Yes.
But that's not an indefinite sign. So both are both arbitrarily positive and negative. So that leads to some sort of instability in the.
Well, you see, this is in the equation, but that's what you're saying. I have to compute the action, and I have to find the sign. And the sign typically will be given to me by the geometry. So in this case, for example, the sign, I can argue that it is always a minus because the work factor is always positive. But later on in the talk, I will discuss a situation where the sign is not defined. And then what you have to do, you have to compute the action, you have to integrate over y, and you will get a sign which is either positive or negative, and it will tell you if you have a loss or not. In this example, the sign is defined. Because you see the work factor is always positive, is your metric. And then other quantities appear quadratically. So in this case, the sign, there is a minus because I'm using the metric minus plus plus plus.
I guess I'm not following something. You're treating this like a time evolution
problem
where the time is the y
group. No. Let me explain. The analogy, I do it in order to identify the perturbations to be able to do the calculation. But the quantization, I do it in the usual time. So this is just very useful for me to determine the spectrum and to be able to diagonalize the system. I will just show you in a while the initial action, which is a mess. But then the quantization, I will do it on time as normal. But there is a subtlety here, is that a five-dimensional field can have a very different coefficient here. And there are examples where this coefficient is not positively defined. And then it will lead me to the wonder, do I have a ghost in 4D or not? I hope I have time to discuss this later on. So this is the action. I only show this to scare people. I don't really hope anyone, because otherwise you could think that it's trivial what I'm doing, and this is not the impression that I want to leave. This is the starting action. There are many modes. There are many perturbations. You see here, there are three. But they are all coupled by, there are junction conditions, there are constraint equations, which you can work out from this action. You can impose them. Once you impose them, you end up if you have only one mode. And then once you have only one mode, you can attempt to diagonalize the system, because in principle, the Kaluza-Klein modes don't appear as decoupled, although they are. And when you do the calculation, this is the general expression for the coefficient. Now what you have to do, you have first to solve the linearized equations. Once you solve them, you compute this integral. And from this way, you will be able to determine the normalization. This is the underlying calculation. And the model which I am applying this is not the Bodberger-Weiss model, because this model cannot be solved analytically for the background. I'm just discussing the generalization of this model. The idea is the same one that I was telling you before. But the idea is that when you write a potential which is some definite structure, you can solve this problem analytically. So I have a model where I can compute the background analytically, so I can do calculation. This is how the geometry looks like. And you see that here I can do as everyone does. I can consider phi 0 to be very small. But what I'm really interested in is what happens when phi 0 becomes large. So what happens when the background, the geometry is very much modified. And of course, as Anupam was saying, in this case, you have really to rethink a moment, how do I solve the hierarchy problem? You see now the geometry will be substantially modified. What you have to do, you have to increase the separation between the drains. Because in order to solve the hierarchy problem, it's in a sense very loosely speaking, you have to maintain a working at the feeding drain. So what I will have to do according to this equation, I will push the drains farther, not much, but I have to do it, so that the work factor there is always small. And these are the solutions. This is, I think this completes this part. This is just application to that model. So on the right, on the left, you see there is the regime that everyone computes. You see this regime to the left is going in the direction that there is no bulk field. So you see this is the masses. And you will see that the mass of the region will go to zero in this regime. Here you see that you have mass of the Kaluza-Klein, they are constant. This is the effect that I knew. There was a linear increase here. And the effect that there is here essentially is due to the fact that the second grain is going far apart. So as soon as the second grain starts to go far apart, you will see that the perturbation of the masses will go down. This system you can just get it from the Einstein equation. This instead is our calculation. The calculation based on the action and on the normalization that I was telling you before. Here I'm computing the normalization, and then I will also discuss what is the coupling of the fields. What is the value of the wave function of this field at our brain. And here you will see, here you go in the limit in which the Kaluza-Klein modes are not coupled. Again, in the sense that here physics is continuous. When the beta goes to zero, you will only be interested in the physics of the radio. However, when you go far apart, you will see that the coupling is increasing. Clearly, there was no way to do this calculation in the approximation that people typically consider. So I would claim that this is really original result. And also what is interesting is that here you approach a region which is clearly phenomenologically excluded. Because here the masses are going down and the coupling is going up. What I did in the paper, I computed the regime in which you can stress your perturbative approach. It's essentially the edge that I'm showing here. If you go farther, you cannot anymore trust to the perturbative calculation. So here the coupling is only phi to mu mu. But if you go farther, you have to consider higher interactions. And also this limit I compute in the paper, around 13 is excluded from corrections to electroweak observable. So I have been able to expand this regime, and I'm going to a regime where this is still perturbative, but it is excluded by experiments. This is the slightly modified, but the idea is the Goldberger-Weiss. So the model precisely is different. You modify it so that you are able to solve it analytically, but the concept is the same.
I didn't get it.
Sorry. Yes, sure, no problem.
I didn't get it.
It's the same potential, but what I'm changing here is the VEV of the bulk field. If the VEV of the bulk field is small, this was what's known before us, I recovered the previous answers. But you see, as I change the VEV, here I know that I'm going in a regime where the coupling is increasing. And here also the mass is increasing, that is known, because when the mass is smaller, when the depth is smaller, there is no stabilization. But what I was explaining to you before is that here the masses will drastically go down because the interbrain distance becomes too big. And here I have no analytic explanation. This is what I get from the calculation. If I can understand it, this I just can pass. But the important point is that the model is the same as before. I'm just computing it in a regime that typically people don't do because the calculation is too complicated, I would say. Okay, now I will discuss very quickly, but I will discuss the effect of the expansion of the non-compact coordinates. So I will discuss in general what is known as the Sitter compactification. So in the previous calculation, I was discussing Minkowski times a compact space. But now I want to discuss what happens when I expand the extra coordinate. And I want to consider the simple case where I can do some calculation, and it is when it is the Sitter. When it is not the Sitter, there are more perturbations because there are less symmetries, and I cannot do the calculation. But when there is the Sitter, I can still play something. And here, the only thing that I want to point out is that you change the kind of equation. So let me see if I can go back here. Here you were getting this equation for the mode. There was only this equation that you solve by separation of variables. Here there is the profile, and then here there is the standard equation for a massive field in a Minkowski. But here you are asking what is the perturbation when the brains are curved. And actually what it happens is that the box always enters in this combination. This is a very generic result. So at the end, you will find that when you solve the eigenvalue problem, here you have an eigenvalue that you have to solve. But the eigenvalue is not precisely the physical mass. The eigenvalue is the combination between the physical mass and the expansion of the universe. When you want really to see what it means the following. Here is the eigenvalue that you solve by just solving the boundary value problem. However, this is the implication that the expansion of the universe has when you want to consider the physical mass. Because when you ask what is the mass of the perturbation, the mass of the perturbation clearly is always the eigenvalue of this one. So what you can really see just here is very generic, because we first did the calculation for codimension one brain, and then this was the result for V is equal one. V is the number of extra dimensions. However, then we just sit down, we say, let's see if we can say more general plane. And the more general plane is that it is a very geometrical plane. No matter what this eigenvalue is, the physical mass will always enter in this combination. So what it means, again, here is, okay, now I have to cannot really do the right calculation because I'm trying to make a general plane, but there is always this worry. The worry is that the expansion of the universe can make the total mass to be negative. Of course, when the total mass is negative, mass squared negative, it means that you have a tachyon, it means that your theory is not anymore stable.
Because you are doing that at that time with composition here, so you are in a regime where your any scale is below this scale. Or, yeah, say for instance, your Hubble scale has to be below this cutoff scale.
Yeah, well, what I'm arguing.
That is actually then perhaps you don't get the total mass.
What I'm arguing is that if you approach this scale, you will start seeing that these effects start to fight against each one. When the scale is higher, I'm not sure if I can do the analytic calculation, but I can do the numeric calculation. And actually, this is an effect that for dimension one, then we saw both analytically and numerically. This is not the final answer. Also, I'm not saying that this is always unstable, because of course I'm not discussing what this eigenvalue is, right? This eigenvalue encodes the effect of the stabilization. But what I have seen in a couple of examples, and also what I see numerically, is that typically the Hubble expansion has a bigger effect on this number than on this number. So you can approach a situation where the system becomes unstable. That's the message that I want to give. And of course, this is not, then you have to work it out model by model. That's clear. But this is the worry that we see is quite general. We were just doing a simple calculation. In the work that Bob also did in much more detail, because he was also considering how you really stabilize the extra space. But my claim here, my concern here is really not to study the dynamics, it was already studied, it was just to show one example. And in this example, again, you can compute and you will find that you have this effect. which is indeed an instability that you reach when you have an number expansion, which is 2 pi. It is just a plane. This is just a stationary point. Here is a point where it has not expansion. I want to discuss if this is stable or not. And you can see that it has clearly two kinds of expansions. This is unstable due to the expansion, precisely due to this term. And then there are two kinds of instability. It's very interesting to see what they are. This is a de Sitter compactification. So this is the radius of the extra space, and this is the velocity of the extra space. This is a de Sitter compactification. So you start with a system which is de Sitter times a sphere. However, as the sphere starts to expand, you go under the compactification limit. And what the system evolves to is two pure mean costs, the pure de Sitter, where it is as isotropic. Of course, the effect of the Sitter here is making everything isotropic. Then we saw another expansion regime. This expansion regime is described by Kessner asymptotes. It's a Kessner geometry, is a typical geometry when you have strong gravity. And this is a result that you cannot get from an analytical approximation. That you really have to do a numerical calculation. This will be written in another paper. And this is the typical collapse which takes place in brain models, for example. Here I just want to comment on a paper that I was doing long ago when I was still a student, the year I graduated. And it was just an exercise that we did. There was Randall Sandrum. And what we did, we said, OK, let's discuss Randall Sandrum and let's discuss its cosmology. Of course, we were not able to solve it exactly, but what we could do the approximation that the extra dimension is static. So we could do, let's assume that the extra dimension is static. Actually, we took a paper from yours and we generalized it. And what we did, we said, let's discuss what is the Hubble parameter. Doing this calculation, we found a very strange result. The result that we found that it was not allowed to put arbitrary high energy density on the brain. This rho zero tells me the energy density on the Planck brain. In principle, we know that the scale in the Planck brain is the Planck scale. So we, in pre-naively, would say I can put an energy which is as high as a Planck mass to the fourth. However, doing this calculation, we were going to an infinity. Clearly, this infinity probably is not physical. It's just telling you that your perturbation, your assumption is wrong. So our assumption is not anymore reliable. We cannot anymore pretend the extra dimension is stabilized. We got this result. We didn't really get, understand what it meaning, but certainly this was the result. After I have done this other paper, I have a bit rethought about this. And one possibility is that whenever you put too much brain, too much matter on the brain, you are reaching a situation where indeed you are violating this limit that I was telling you before. The instability, because of course if you add matter, now you will have this is the Hubble parameter on the brain. The Hubble parameter will be so large that in a sense the system becomes unstable. Now we could do the calculation and we could see that the regime in which this scale you reach it, is precisely the regime when the Hubble parameter is greater than the inverse of the distance. This is the distance between the two brains. And you know, typically in four dimensions, the Hubble parameter, the inverse of the Hubble parameter, has the meaning of an horizon. And so typically we say physics within the Hubble parameter is causal physics. Physics outside the horizon is a causal. The idea is that in this case, the extra dimension is becoming too large compared to the horizon scale. As H is increasing, the horizon scale diminishes, so that it is not possible to keep causal connection between the edges of the other geometry. In a sense, OK, this is by the 4D argument. So I don't know how much it really applies, it, but it's interesting, quite interesting that it converges to what I'm saying. Here, h to the minus 1, the horizon, becomes smaller than the size of the extra dimension. So the two edges of the bulk don't know any more of each other, so it's very hard to get stabilization. That's the idea. OK, I think I have 10 minutes, so I can discuss the work in progress, because I also want to show you what I'm doing right now. And this is actually a very nice paper by Maxime, which is discussing how you would resolve the brain models. Because we are accustomed to have tension brains, which are positive or negative. But of course, in field theory, a negative tension brain is harder to imagine for 3 minutes. A palpitation brain, okay, you could have a kink. The kink is has some given energy, which is localized. And typically, this corresponds to a positive energy. So the kink, you can really associate it to a positive brain. The question that Maxime was asking is, how can I resolve in a field theory a negative tension brain? And what he came up, actually came up with a very general theorem, is that, if I understand correctly, whenever you want to mimic the negative tension brains, here is your work factor. This is what the work factor is doing with Randall Sandrew. So what he was trying to do, he was trying to mimic it. But he could come up with a generic theorem that whenever here you have a positive curvature, you have to have a bad kinetic term for the scalar. So this is a sense of a kink, anti-kink profile. And then this will resolve the positive brain, this would resolve the negative brain. Remember in my notation, the correct sign is the minus sign, because my metric that I use is always minus, plus, plus, plus. In any case, this model shows that here you have the wrong, in a sense, but I write it in a quote from the reason I will explain. This region is forced to have the sign that you would not expect. So the conclusion is that certainly you have to put a Gaussian phi in order to resolve this model. Now, as he also was pointing out, let's try to understand what is the significance of this. Because if you have, for example, a four-dimensional ghost, it's clearly that is something that you don't want to have. Because a four-dimensional ghost, for example, could tell you that the box is unstable. It's just decaying into it. Solutions that people propose, for example, are to consider models which have higher derivatives. So you could hope that the quadratic derivative has the wrong sign, but higher derivative has a positive sign. This is something that many people do. This is just one example that was recently discussed. But there is certainly a lot of literature on this. However, the significance of a ghost is less clear when you have higher dimension, because we are, at the end, we are interested in physics in four dimensions. So what we should do, as he was saying, we should take this model, we should do the calculation of the perturbation, we should integrate over the extra dimension, and we should look what is the kinetic term of the four-dimensional mode. This goes in the direction of the question you asked me before. For the Randall-Sandrew standard case, the kinetic term was always with the right sign for all the perturbations. However, here, you cannot guess it a priori, because there are regions where in 5D where the sign is good, there are regions in 5D where the sign is bad. So what you have to understand is where the 5D, where the Calutta-Klein modes are localized, and you have to understand what the sign, overall sign, once you integrate over Y is. And this is a problem which is we are doing right now with a postdoc in Minnesota, Nelson Nunes. And we are almost at the end, we are just evaluating it. So this is not surprisingly what you find. This is the starting action for the stellar field. This action depends, you see the sign is not definite, but we could do the calculation for an arbitrary function. This is what you end up with. You are able always to reabsorb the absolute value of this, but what you left with the coefficient is always the sign. So whenever this quantity is positive, it will give a positive contribution to the kinetic term. Whenever it is negative, it will give a negative contribution. And the calculation that you have to do, you have to solve a Schrödinger-like equation. And the Schrödinger-like equation is in the extra dimension, you have to solve for this mode. Once you have solved it, you plug it back here, and then you will see the total result is positive. And not surprisingly, you have a problem in the theory when the, because what is really interesting is that this can change sign. So the question is, how my perturbation behaves when this goes to zero? When this goes to zero, the theory blows up. So you may think, and it is certainly the case, that higher derivatives are very important there, because higher derivatives could give control of the situation. However, you really don't need it. It's true that the potential here is a bounding for below, but this potential you can do the integral. So actually, you can have physical modes in this potential because you can solve this Schrödinger equation. This, once you, we know there are general theorems, so this we checked. What is remaining to do now is to solve this numerically. Actually, Nelson is doing it right now, and I hope we will get answer very quickly about this. And of course, once we have the answer, we will know what if the Calutta-Klein modes have a positive coefficient or a negative coefficient. So we will know the behavior of the theory from the 4D point of view, which is at the end what you want.
It suggests that even if you have force, you can have field theory.
Well, in principle, you have a Gauss in the five-dimensional theory, but in a sense, the Kaluza-Klein contribution doesn't only change the mass, but it also changes the kinetic term. So at the end, you are interested in what is the kinetic term overall for the gravity, for the perturbation of gravity plus scalar field. And the argument is that it's not really obvious that it will be a Gauss, because if the sun was always bad overall in the dark, then there is, I'm with you, there will be a Gauss for sure. But if the sign is changing, at the end, like in this example, it's not really clear to me what is the Fourier interpretation without doing the calculation. I could add that the mode of the perturbation are always localized here. In this case, I wouldn't have a Gauss in the Fourier theory, so the model would be correct. However, I could add that the perturbation instead are more localized here, and this model would imply a Gauss. So what you really have to do is to compute the kinetic term for gravity, because perturbation of gravity, as I imagine, are more complicated. It's not just this term, there are additional terms. Once you do it, you will end up that you have to solve this problem. And I hope we will get answers very soon, because we have done everything. We are just to solve numerical initial equation. Yes?
Yeah,
how do
you
think
about the general question? Because I'm trying to understand how in the world what you're doing fits into the physics I know. And one of the things that I know is there's practically a theorem in quantum field theory that there are no self-coupled scalar field theories above four dimensions. So I mean, you're somehow pretending that you can write a conceptual for a scalar field theory in five or six dimensions, you can modify the kinetic term by any field by, but it is practically a theorem in quantum field theory that the only scalar field theory
This is a semi-classical calculation, and it is what everyone is doing in the context of studying the coupling of these multi frames.
Well, so is everybody
working at the classical level and going quantum mechanics? Well, here I'm working at, I'm telling you what I'm doing, I'm working at semi-classical. And of course, I'm not doing part integral, and I'm not considering the fluctuations beyond the quadratic order.
But if quantum corrections drive all the subcouplings of every scalar field in five dimensions to zero, which is what the theorem says, how does this suggest it?
I don't know the theorem, so I don't know if this applies on ideas with boundaries. This is another thing which maybe could.
It's a local
quantum. Okay. Okay. I cannot tell you fancy.
Please, did you really say that theories are such quantities, but don't they just say that intuitively?
I think everybody has ever studied the problem of the existence of scalar field theories as quantum field theories comes to the conclusion that there are no non-trivial fixed points above two dimensions, and
there are two other stuff.
Possibly, but like, I mean, of course,
knowing,
now we
get
to
the
main
where
we don't know anything.
Revive
the
dimension
of that
theory? Anyway,
yeah.
Long story.
Given the time you sleep, like, you get
the brain.
Can I ask another question? Sure. The way you bring about the theory, it almost certainly has its stabilities if you choose the right starting configuration. So is the hope that there's at least a local stability to this brain configuration that you wouldn't access, you would stay away from the region?
Well, I'm not
familiar where you have the stability.
If I study this at the quadratic level, I have no freedom in my starting point. There are some resonant modes, which are the modes of the perturbation of the theory.
No, I mean, if you're only doing linear stability analysis, if you went to high enough order, you don't know certainly
see increased stability. That could be. I just want to see
that there are finite distances away from starting.
That you're right. I can understand. You can have a, when you do the part integral, you can have fluctuations which move to the better region. I totally agree. I just want to see if this survives the quadratic level. Possibly it will not survive even the quadratic level. If it survives, I agree with you, I have still not a composite question. But I find it an interesting problem which is worth spending some time, because it's the only example that I'm aware to of attempt to resolving the brain from the field theory. So this is why I like the paper, this is why I wanted to invest some time. But I agree with you. It's possible that what you have to do at the end is really you have to add the higher order derivatives so that you can offer this.
You said that you would just add higher order derivatives and get rid of the code.
Oh, there's no general theorem. But that's certainly something that in 4D people try, and in some cases they manage.
Well, almost always in this case where they were. John and I are saying the same thing. You almost, I mean, if you have a theory in four dimensions that has those, you add higher derivatives.
What? Okay. Also, another thing that I have that I don't like of this theory is that typically they are beyond your control because there's really no way that you can say I'm really controlling my theory. And eventually, I wrote a critical paper against, well, towards Ghost on the Station, and I shared this point of view.
I think your better statement is that you keep adding a further derivative step and order by order, then you cannot get rid of the rules. But you may introduce some non derivative correction. And there's, for those that I don't think.
No,
I thought you were trying to get around this thing that John was quoting by introducing an infinite number of higher derivatives, which would be effectively some sort of non-local theory.
Yeah.
So how do you define the theory?
Well, that's typically the problem. You have to give the ultraviolet completion, and that's certainly not very clear.
Any number of rooms. There's an infinite number of them, so a miracle happens when you add them all up.
Okay.
Suppose.
Okay. We just keep another couple of minutes, I'll be very quick. This is also very speculative, and this is just an attempt that we are doing right now with Gergely time with topics. And it's the idea of can we change the shape of gravity in brain configurations, and what are the limits against these? And the idea is that right, when you have non-trivial things in the extra dimensions, here the mass that you would write in five dimensions is not really a mass for your node, but mostly gives you the localization of your node. And this is a very simple exercise, very nice, by Uber potential particle, which are considering how can I localize fermions on a king, for example. And I will not go into the details, of course, here you have to determine these chiralities, but they just be quick. The claim is that the fermion prefers at least one of the chiralities likes to go when the mass is zero. So just changing this five-dimensional mass, I will change the localization of my fermion. This is just a tutorial, but in this case, you can really do the calculation. Now that there are brain models, people started to discuss if you can play similar games when you have brain models, so what can you add in the bulk, and how you can control the wave function. And actually, there was an industrial activity, which was started, let's say, by Pomerola and Gergeta, and by also other people. You put the different bulk masses or brain masses, for example, for fermions or stellar fields, and then you will achieve, you will play with these games. And recently, also, there was a calculation with games. So my question is, can I do the same for gravity? Is it something easy? Or what can I learn from there? I will try to argue that there is at least one motivation. And I will not present the details here, because, but if you want, I can talk later. I just want to say that when you add a mass, here I'm adding a mass like really a field power theory. When you add a mass, typically for gravity, it's much more complicated than for gauge fields. And it's something that we know very well in 4D, right? Because in 4D, we know that for the massive graviton, as the famous Van Dam, Bell, and Zakharov discontinuity. And indeed, there were some attempts by this group of people to change the mass in the extra dimension, but they got lost. So now what these people did, actually, they considered some additional mass term on the brains. So we just tried to make the game more general. We were just trying to right now to put masses both on the bike and on the brain. What is interesting is that you can achieve some result. Actually, it's a generalization of the Pauli field calculation. And if you fine-tune the mass term on the brain and on the bike, you can achieve a spin-through field, which is massless at the quadratic level. And you can localize it wherever you want. That's my claim. This is just a technical result, but it was not trivial to start with because there were some attempts which didn't work. And the typical Randall-Sundrum example is when you don't have this term. So you see, in typical Randall-Sundrum, the graviton is localized in the same way as the geometry. But we can play, and we can see that this is achievable. And what is interesting also is that at least at the quadratic level, the model is not lost. And if you play with the parameter, now we can deform Randall-Sundrum quite strongly. And we can end up with a graviton which is localized at the infrared brain. And this is certainly something which open questions in the light of the SFT correspondence. Because typically we say that graviton is localized at the ultraviolet brain, which means that in the CFT is like just putting the graviton there. However, typically we say that having fields on the infrared brain, they correspond to fields which are emerging from the CFT. So in this case, the dual version of this is probably, although it's a bit speculative, but it's probably an emerging gravity from the CFT. And this is something that we're still thinking about it, and I'm very good, I'm very happy that Eric is in the paper, because certainly we cannot to understand what is going there. But this is very speculative. At the moment, we just checked the technical part, and we did find that there are no laws, and we can play with the wave function of the gravity. What the interpretation is still in progress. Okay, let me conclude. I just tried to discuss the dynamics of the extra dimension. This is something which certainly will remain with us for a lot of time, because these are really our way for phenomenology that we can hope to detect the extra dimension. And the bad part, of course, is that there is some work to be done, which is to find a stabilization. But the good part, as I said, is that this is something which gives you hope for phenomenology. The perturbations, as I argued, that you can treat them, at least at the quadratic level, with the semi-classical approximation, as everyone is doing in cosmology. And actually, through this, we generalized previous calculation. Even before us, we were not the first who computed the cutting of the radio with the standard model fields. We were certainly not the one who proposed this. But what we are able to do with GR techniques is to compute the system where the mixing between gravity and the scalar field starts to be efficient. I also argued what is the effect of the expansion of the non-compact coordinates. This is something which we can see a general effect. Of course, you have to check model by model, but the general effect is that it's more difficult to stabilize an expanding universe rather than a static one. And it's something which certainly should be taken into account. And then I just work two more things which are a bit more speculative, I admit. One is how can I resolve objects like brains? And actually, the paper of Maxime is not the only one when people write new standard kinetic terms in the bike. So certainly this calculation applies to other calculations. And finally, the last thing I just mentioned very quickly is how you can play with the shape of gravity and what you can learn on the CFT. Okay, thank you. Yeah, but to do this, the approach.
It would be okay.
that other